This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Tim Henney. Our next guest is Sandy Allen, a writer, speaker, editor, and teacher. Their new book is A Kind of Miraculous Paradise, a true story about schizophrenia. Now, Sandy Allen did not know their Uncle Bob very well until in 2009, he mailed Sandy his autobiography. It was typewritten in all caps. It was just a stream of error-riddled sentences over 60 single-spaced pages. And sometimes, often, incomprehensible manuscript, it proclaimed to be a true story about being labeled a psychotic, paranoid schizophrenic. The result is Sandy Allen's new book, again, A Kind of Miraculous Paradise. And Sandy joins us now by phone. Good morning to you, Sandy. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So what was the feeling you had when Uncle Bob sent you this manuscript and you open it up? I mean, first you knew Uncle Bob as what? How did you know him?
He kind of existed at the periphery of the family, you know. He was, he called himself a hermit. And when I'd asked my mom as a kid, you know, what's up with your brother? And the word she had used was crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those were sort of some of the ideas I had about who this person was. And other than seeing him at family reunions in Minnesota when I was a kid, I hadn't really seen him in person all that much in my life. I had gone to see him at his little house in the desert in Northern California just once when I was in college. I think just because I was curious, you know, where does this uncle of mine live? But I think I had a curiosity about him, for sure. I wondered, you know, why does the family regard this person differently, or what does that mean, crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. But when he had reached out to me, this was about 10 years ago, and I was starting graduate school at the University of Iowa studying nonfiction writing, and he had reached out. He wanted to mail me this thing he'd written, and, you know, I didn't think too much of it. And when it showed up, I, at first, didn't remember what it was, and then I started to look at it, and I was honestly pretty repulsed. It stunk like cigarettes, and it was written in all capital letters and very misspelled and punctuated with colons, and it was profane, and you know, it was, there was just a lot about it. And then that, as you said, you know, that phrase, he was labeled a psychotic, paranoid schizophrenic, you know, I think I must have been sort of turned off by that too, right? Because that's something our culture had taught me to do, was kind of, you know, look away or be a little afraid or whatever. So initially I put it back in its envelope, and I set it in a drawer, and I tried to sort of forget it was there, but, you know, obviously didn't work. I think in part I thought about throwing it away, but I couldn't really bring myself to do that because he had typed it on a typewriter. And I think I had that sense, you know, this,
how long it takes,
however unconventional it might look, he surely spent a lot of time creating it. And so I think just, you know, artist to artist, writer to writer, I couldn't do that. So it sat there, and then eventually I did begin to figure out how to read it. And then it really began to change both my mind and then my life.
Did you feel like you needed to translate what Uncle Bob was saying into a more intelligible script, or did you feel like you really wanted to honor what he wrote?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. So, you know, 10 years ago when I was first kind of reacting to having received this story, and then when I read it, you know, and it really challenged, I think, just the basic preconceptions that I had had about this person, you know, like thinking, for example, that he would think his own life was a tragedy. Instead, you know, I read his story and realized, oh, he considers himself to be quite a success, you know, like there were these big ways in which I had guessed, you know, I had guessed his life maybe didn't contain very much, but here was this big adventure. He had lived so many lives, turned out. So I was sort of just reeling with, wow, I had really misunderstood this person. And I wrote a little essay, you know, I was in graduate school studying this stuff. You submit your work for your peers and they critique it. And so I'd done that. I'd submitted my work, and my peers really didn't like this essay I had submitted. And what I had done was really presented Uncle Bob's writing faithfully to how he'd done it, spellings and colons and capitals and all. And I noticed in that workshop, nobody liked what I had done, but they also didn't, there was no unanimous reason why. It was just sort of like generally negative reaction. And it made me wonder, like, huh? And I really noticed the thing that really disheartened me about, you know, my initial attempt at trying to present this material to my peers was that no one had heard it. No one had listened. You know, I had presented them with these passages from Bob that I thought, wow, you know, here's this sequence when he's initially hospitalized, and it's heart-wrenching. But nobody had noticed that because they were really caught up on the way it looked or asking questions about if it was problematic for me to present it. So that made me begin to try to find another way to accomplish my goal, which was, hey, I just want people to hear this. And I started arriving at what ultimately became the form of a big thread of the book. The book is written in two fonts, so it sort of is Bob's story in the one, and then it's my story in the other font. But I arrived at this form that I call sometimes a translation, but I think a better metaphor is actually like a cover, like a song. I think of what I'm doing in Miraculous Paradise as a cover of Uncle Bob's story. I'm taking his song, but I'm playing it my way, and I'm playing it my way in part to overcome, I think, a reader's reaction, which tends to be that they don't want to engage with his story. And so I'm using the facts of, you know, being a writer and kind of having that toolkit in order to create something that invites that reader in and hopefully allows them to access a story that I think is really important for all kinds of people to hear.
Sandy, I'm really curious about how maybe the story that you're telling about Bob and the parallel to your life and the challenges and the way that you have come into being a more full expression of your authentic self. And if I may, I'd like to sort of talk about, you mentioned, you know, when Bob first presented the story to you 10 years ago, I think your life has had an evolution that's been significant over the last 10 years. Did that inform or provide a unique lens for you to present Bob's story through?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, so, I mean, I've been coming out publicly over the last year, honestly, as trans, as non-binary, and I use they, them pronouns. And I recognize that to some readers or listeners, rather, you've maybe never heard of those things, but that's, you know, part of what I'm taking on in deciding to become candid about these things with strangers. You know, I've been more candid to, you know, my therapist, my husband, et cetera, in recent years, my closest friends. But partly because becoming an author meant that I was being asked directly questions about myself, and in part because I think that researching Bob's story, his diagnosis, his life, these issues also really caused me to encounter, you know, some reading about gender and gender nonconformity and such that I think I had really fastidiously avoided looking head on my entire life, that, you know, I've always been the way I am. If I had been given a word for how I am when I was three, I would have taken it. But, you know, it took till I was in my mid-20s, I think, to really, in part, our culture has changed. But I think also my willingness to engage with it changed. And I think so in a way, Bob's project has really, I think, gave me the opportunity to really read about, well, what's in common here. I think we're thinking about ways in which people might be abnormal, you know, like if I'm saying I'm a gender nonconforming, I'm trans, you know, that I'm saying there's something that's, you know, less common about me in my experience here. And I think that Bob similarly was someone who, when he got a label like schizophrenia, that diagnosis, you know, that reflects something about him, right, that is maybe not as common and is different. And I think so that the question then becomes, you know, what do we pathologize? Or you know, if I say, oh, this is what's different about me, well, does that mean that my civil rights should be radically reduced? Does that mean that my point of view doesn't matter? Does that mean that I can't speak honestly or truthfully about my life and my experiences? You know, what does that encourage the rest of the world to presume about me and so on? So I think, you know, over time, yeah, I've been on a journey of acknowledging many ways in which, you know, my story and my experiences and my life and my mind intersect with the kind of bigger work that I think ushering Bob's story into the world has kind of prompted me to take on here. But I do think, you know, especially in this day and age, I feel a responsibility to be candid about the way in which I'm different, because I think that there's a risk in that, you know, and it can be awkward and scary and embarrassing and all that. But it also, I think, hopefully can encourage us all to continue to think about the ways in which, well, maybe there's not a normal, you know, maybe that normal is actually kind of standing in the way of, you know, having a society that has more compassion and empathy toward all kinds of people.
Mm, well put. You mentioned a term, pathologize, that I want to go a little bit deeper on with you and ask you within the context of your writing and what you choose to focus on. Does that play a role in everything that you address, from your blogging to your essays to possibly the next book that you take on? Will it be to destigmatize and address that issue of what our culture chooses to pathologize?
Oh, you know, I think to some degree I'm interested in that. I think that A Kind of Miraculous Paradise is about that. You know, I'm presenting us with Bob's version of himself, you know, or a rendition of it. And I'm presenting the reader also with how the rest of the family remembers these events, how the medical community views Bob, how society views Bob. I'm you know, questioning whether his story is true. I fact-checked it. You know, I'm really testing, I think, some of our preconceptions that we have about this person because of, you know, that diagnosis and all of the baggage that word might bring in, you know, in people's minds. And I'm really asking, what do we know about this diagnosis medically? And I think one of the places it's leading me is to actually talk about not so much focusing on these diagnoses or, you know, these pathologized, you know, kind of labels or boxes that we've put people in and so forth. But I think what I've become very interested in and sort of where I'm headed and where Miraculous Paradise, I think, led me to go is thinking about what could we be doing instead? What are the you know, the quote, mental health care? You know, what could we be providing for people who have need, who are in crisis or who have, you know, non-normative experiences or who are, you know, reacting to a trauma or to something that's happened to them or, you know, or to, you know, people who are having experiences that aren't, you know, quote, the norm. I think so. I've really, the last few years as a reporter and a researcher, been kind of going more in that direction of trying to understand where are the places already on Earth and in our country where people have been creating, I think, you know, often more common sense, more humane and cheaper, you know, infrastructure sort of response to the inevitability, honestly, of madness, of psychiatric, you know, struggle, because, you know, so many of us have no idea, and none of us have any idea what's coming, you know, in our worlds and inside our minds. And so I do think I'm interested in continuing to tell stories that help us expand our imaginations in this space. And I do think that part of that is continuing to, you know, I don't think we have to get rid of this sort of the valence of medicine and science to discuss this stuff, but what else can we add there? You know, is medicine and science enough, you know, or is it important too to keep in mind, you know, the role of the spiritual, for example, the role that the spiritual can play in psychiatric healing, you know, and that's one of the things that I think Bob's story is really showing us, is that, you know, over the course of his life, he does figure out, you know, how to stabilize and how to get himself in a better situation. And I think for him, a big part of that was finding God and Jesus. So I think that ended up being a big part of my book.
The book is A Kind of Miraculous Paradise, A True Story About Schizophrenia. It is a very, very timely book. I think we all have an Uncle Bob in our family. Maybe we are the Uncle Bob. But Sandy Allen, thank you for writing this book. It's wonderful. And thank you for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.